Guys, to another episode of Essential Workers. I'm here with the meat suit crew, I guess we're calling ourselves now. And I was thinking about what are the most important topics that we need to talk about that haven't been thoroughly talked about. And some of these things we could talk about endlessly because they're so central to our path of spiritual growth. But I felt that zeroing in on what we think, what we know, what we believe, what lessons we've learned relating to the process of freeing ourselves from attachments, actually finding freedom in general in our lives, freeing ourselves from karmic burdens. And the nature of karma is something we have to discuss because there's a lot of interrelated metaphysical concepts here that we could get into. We could get into the idea that, and all the repeating patterns in our lives that we are not noticing are a part of something deeper and some kind of metaphysical energy field that we have to learn to identify and then free ourselves from each of those patterns as we become more aware of them. And there's that principle, and there's principles that I feel we could even get into that are like the collective karma or the collective attachments that we have to like deeper unhealed wounds of possessions and ownerships and the need for control. And all these things seem to relate to the way in which we become attached to things, but there are these seemingly deeper issues that we're learning together about how to free ourselves from that could potentially, you know, unburden the planet and as a collective, once we can break through, you know, a personal sense of attachment that is excessive and then help others to see it with a more forgiving, accepting light and how we can be, you know, more free as spiritual beings to pursue whatever it is we're here for, which might simply be learning the way to remove ourselves from the need to have all these attachments. But surely we have a reason for being here besides to simply release ourselves. Otherwise, in theory, a nuclear bomb going off and killing everyone would be the solution if simply freeing ourselves from attachments to this planet was the problem. I think we came here for some other kind of adventure besides just freeing ourselves from the adventure, if that makes sense. Any thoughts on that?
Well, do you think that perhaps the idea of karma is the inability or the road towards correction, to correct the path, right? Because I've actually in the past couple of weeks or so, there's been a little bit of a kerfuffle online with Billy Carson. Yeah. And Wes Huff. And there was some type of thing going on there. And, you know, I really like Billy Carson, but every time I heard him speaking about certain things, especially within a Christian paradigm or ideas, right? Some of that stuff was a little iffy. And I'm like, I can't really get to that idea. For example, he said that the, you know, Jesus Christ was never crucified, right? And for me, it's like, well, there's a lot of historical evidence that was done, extra biblical sources. So it wasn't just from the Bible, right? So that happened. And, you know, you kind of get iffy. And then there was a little bit of like a quote unquote debate, which was really not too much of a debate, where Billy Carson's friend invited him on a podcast to talk to Wes Huff. And then Wes Huff, within the first like 10 minutes, showed that those particular examinations were not accurate.
Or citations.
Those different things, right? And when I saw that you wanted to do about like karma, even though I don't think at all that Billy Carson is trying to like, you know, harm anybody or anything like that. Not at all. It's just that he wasn't accurately depicting things with sources and bringing the receipts on certain things. Right. And now kind of like a question back to you guys. Is that like, could that be considered a type of karma if you don't do your due diligence?
And if you're very, I mean, in this case, it was almost as though he was attached to an identity of being an expert in areas that he wasn't an expert in. And I think that's what part of some of the criticism was around, because it'd be very easy to say, I don't know these things. I'm not an expert in these things. I'll defer to the experts. And then it wouldn't have been as much of a controversy, because it's just simply a few things might have been missed. A few things might have been stated incorrectly, and you could release that. But I think that the fact that there's been, you know, well, I don't want to get into this particular instance too much, but it was enjoyable for people, because people can see aspects of, you know, what I've seen with friends who take something that sounds nice to them, and then they make that a part of their belief system, not because of the thorough research, but because it sounds nice, and they can integrate that into their identity, and the identity becomes the attachment. Although every thread of our identity, you know, is ultimately, I think, an illusion. In this world, but we're still using these to set up the lessons and the games that we can use to interact with others through these seeming disagreements and seeming arguments over what the truth is. And one thing I want to talk about is like what are the contexts for the lessons that we're learning that we might not call those karma or attachments, because they're why we're here, to have these lessons. And you could say our parents are like attachments. You know, we're very attached to our parents when we're first born. We're literally inside of our mom. We're very attached to this person. And then we come out and we've chosen this path of programming, and our parents' attachments and programming gets offloaded onto us a little bit as children. And we try to learn through assuming that this is the way we do life. And then we can start to question it over time, and that's another form of collective release of the attachments. As the child disagrees with the parent on what is so important in this world, then there's an opportunity for this collective release. I've been thinking about that a lot. You know, I have a son now, and he's just trying to trying to do what he loves to do, and I'm trying to figure out what my role is in correcting that, and trying to figure out, how much smarter is he than me in some areas where he can find joy immediately. And I'm like pushing him like, no, you gotta be very disciplined in this life. But what is this discipline that I'm assuming is discipline? Because he can open his heart, just blow his heart open in an instant when I'm least expecting it, and just give us hugs and like, we're just melting in tears. And he's just like, this is just how you do life. But I'm getting lost on different threads here. Did that answer your question, John?
Part of it too is like your self-identity. It's like when you're born and you're a little kid, it's like you think the world revolves around you, right? And you kind of see everything as like you're the center of the universe. And it's like as we become adults, unless you mentally try to let that go, you kind of still feel that way. And a lot of people, you know, have egos and opinions of their self-worth based on their money, and you know, my opinions are this way and I'm up here and you're down there kind of thing. And it's like, it's better if you just, you know, I remember the first time I flew in a plane and I watched my city become a dot, you know, and it was like, wow, how little I'm not important at all. Like my city's not important at all. You know, you just realize how small and insignificant you are. And I think it's important for people, especially when you get to a level of fame, to just remember that you're just one little speck, you know? And as much as important as you are, it's like, you got to realize that like in the macro scale and the grand scheme of things, like you got to be humble, you know, and try to disconnect your ego or your feeling of self-worth, to be humble and have a sense of humor, you know, and admit your flaws, and don't be afraid to say, I don't know, or I made a mistake, or, you know, all that stuff. Cause you know what, when people say I made a mistake, I'm sorry, and they really mean it, people will respect that more than even someone who says something correct. You know, it's like, be a human, you know, none of us really know what we're doing here. This is just an experience. We're all kind of winging it, and nobody really knows. You know, you become an adult and have kids, and it doesn't make you a professional. You know, you're just another human with a little human, you know, and it's like, what does that even mean? Nobody knows, you know, so just be humble. That's I would say to even people like Billy Carson, you know, it's like, maybe you have millions of dollars, but so what, you know, be humble.
Yep. And Chris, I really want to just start out with the most abstract lens on what we're talking about with these metaphysical principles. And you had training from Eastern Indian guru who taught about karma and taught about samskara. Would you share with us what your views are on the relationship between these principles and the metaphysical reality?
Sure. Yeah. It's actually very practical. So imagine you one evening you drink a lot of alcohol, like lots and lots of alcohol. Now, when you wake up the next day, you're going to have a pretty bad headache, right? So who gave you that headache? Why is that headache there? Yeah, it's a consequence of action that you did before, right? So in a way, that's how you can look at life. You can look at life as we're just experiencing the consequences of something that came before. The confusing part is when you think that some of the things that came before, they happened before this lifetime. That's a whole thing, but and you could argue, and actually I was part of the teaching, is that the only reason we were born in the first place is because we have consequences that haven't played out yet, haven't worked themselves out. So that's basically the idea of samskara and karma, and that we're just compelled to do things. Like if you develop a habit that's every day you do the same thing for 10 years, you're going to wake up the next morning and you're going to do the same thing. And if you don't do it, you're going to feel weird. And we become habituated to certain actions. And anyway, that's the philosophical view of karma. And it's a very deep subject, and it's also very practical in your own life. You can, I wanted to tell this story. I guess I could tell it now. Recently, I had someone post online that they were having trouble with. They recorded some bad audio for their podcast. Okay. Now, just a little background about me. I'm an audio engineer. I've been an audio engineer since the early 90s. I've worked in the music business and all that. I've done podcast production. I'm an audio guy. Literally, that's like that's the thing I'm best at in this life. So I responded to this woman and I said, yeah, I think I can help. I got tools. I got the best software on the planet. And she's like, cool. So she gives me this audio. It was the worst audio recording I've ever heard in my life. And I was like, oh God, here we go. Cause you know, that means I'm going to have to fight with it and all this. So I fought with it and I told her, look, it's not good. I'm going to try to do my best, but it's not magic, right? It's not magic. So I did the best I could. I sent her back some cleaned up audio. And from her response, I could tell she wasn't happy with it. And then she wasn't responding much at all. And I was like, something's going on here. Maybe she got someone else to fix the audio. Okay, fine. It's okay. So 2 days later, the episode comes out. And I go to YouTube and I click play on the episode. And I'm hearing the audio of the guest. And it was not my audio. And it was hundreds of times better than my audio. Like, it wasn't even close. The audio I produced was like garbage compared to what happened. And I'm like, so I immediately messaged her and I'm like, what did you use? What plugin or what processor? And she didn't respond yet because it's the weekend. But what here's the point. So before I get to the punchline, for a couple of days, I was feeling like I felt my ego was hurt. I was like, man, I'm the audio guy. And what I didn't use those words in my head. It was just a feeling, right? That feeling of ego. And then I realized it and I'm like, oh yeah, this is my ego. And then I realized too, that I haven't produced audio on a day-to-day basis for between 2 and 3 years. Guess what happened between 2 and 3 years ago? AI. And I'm like, there must be some AI processor somewhere that is just literally like magic. And I don't know about it. So I was trying to say, oh, I'm the audio engineer. I know what to do. But guess what? A new tool, a technology smoked me. This woman who's not, she's a host of a show. She's not an audio engineer. She probably doesn't know anything about audio. And her result was like 100 times better than mine. And I was amazed. So anyway, the point is that I've been, in terms of karma and samskara, I'm used to being the audio guy, but I got humbled and I realized, you know what? I'm just a human and I might have skills fine, but like, that doesn't mean I'm the best. And there's new technology coming out that is just off the charts. And so anyway, I guess I wanted to share that story. I don't know. Does that mean anything?
Wait. Did you figure out what the actual solution was? Did she tell you?
Not yet. She didn't.
Oh, respond. So you're still in it.
Well, kind of, but I know it's AI. I know it's an AI plugin. I just don't know which one. So I can find out. I know enough people in the podcasting space. And if I do probably an hour's worth of research, I can find out. I'm not worried about that, but
the AI has no ego.
Well, you can program it to pretend.
Whole. It will not you feel any guilt.
Yeah. I will say that when I first
program it to pretend.
When I first started playing with the AI, I was getting in intense emotional arguments. I was so filled with emotion, like, how can you think this? What about this? And it wasn't smart enough to answer me completely rationally. Therefore, I could keep getting more angry. Like, I'm talking to a person who just can't understand what I'm saying. And I had to get through that. It took a few days for me to level out some of my, this is not a person I'm talking to here. This is something on a different level. But that's a lot of intense catalyst for people these days to rewrite our perceptions of the world around not being the smartest in any particular area when the computers can do these things. But one of the things I want to go back to is this idea of the actions that are unfolding being something that's just continuous. And the Law of One books talk about the nature of karma as being equivalent on a metaphysical sense to what we think of as inertia in a physical sense, where when you're driving down a car, that car is going to keep going down the road. Even if there's no gas applied, it's got a lot of inertia and it keeps on going in that particular direction until the metaphysical principle of forgiveness or acceptance is invoked. And that's the equivalent of putting on the brakes. You're starting to put on the brakes of that which you were attached to. And now you can actually release from that attachment and allow yourself to stop going so much in that direction. And so I think that the flip side of this that I've thought about is if we put a lot of inertia behind positive thinking, or I could say thinking about God, thinking about an infinite aspect of our reality, of our identity, or prayer. Prayer is one way of looking at, you know, our relationship to reality as being something that's not dependent upon the external, but more dependent upon our alignments in the internal. And when we reclaim our ability to use the wheelwork of the metaphysical dimensions in pursuing that which we think is worthy, we can create new realities for ourselves with what people would call manifestation. But I think this is, you know, another way of looking at just having faith. We're having faith that the higher source of the reasons behind all manifestation, the reasons behind all of reality unfolding the way it does, we can be connected to that deeper source when we release from these individual attachments and things that are holding us back by our own free will since we were born, I guess, or since previous lifetimes, or however long we've been enjoying particular patterns of evolution. So it seems like the idea of karma and attachment is sort of inversely related to this idea of manifestation. Go ahead.
I did have a similar experience to Chris doing for my podcast setup. So I did a practice podcast with one of my buddies, right? I said, okay, we need an hour just to see how everything works, like a audio video. Video was fine. But the audio kept on like clipping, like at certain spots. Like I'd be talking and it would be like kind of like, and then that's cut in out. Certain spots. Yeah. I'm like, what the heck is this? And I got all these cables and stuff. I'm like, maybe it's cables. And then I returned some cables because they're the wrong cables. Then I tried some stuff. Then I'm like, well, I got two mics. This is like an H2 mic, like an older microphone, but it's still like the, like a standard for business. And then I got the Blue Yeti. And today I figured it out. It was because it was in the wrong, Hertz, is it? It's supposed to be 488 type of thing. Like you got to program it in. What they were off in that respect, both of them, because the way I have to like have two mics running into this detail studio that I have, you have to make an aggregate device. So you put both mics together and then I went into the settings. I'm like, oh, let's change that. Let's change that. Boom, boom, boom. Then I did like a 10-minute test and I'm like, no clip. Because I just kind of like, I did everything I could. I got all these different things. And in mind, I was like, I'm going to have my buddy on for a podcast. He's like a doctor of theology. And like, he's got like all this historical knowledge. And I'm like, it's unacceptable for 2 hours of like clipping, like audio clipping. I don't care if like one or two throughout the show. I don't care. That's fine. But that is unacceptable. And this whole thing was going on. And I messaged him, like, okay, I'm ready to do the show. And then all of a sudden I find this audio problem and I'm like, oh, damn it. And then when I let go, I figured it out today. Who like texts me like a minute after I finish it? My buddy. Okay, I'm ready to do the podcast like hopefully next weekend or so. And I'm like,
you know, it's
that
funny
whole letting go thing.
Your example there of, you know, you're doing everything you think is right, but it was something in the frequency or the hertz that wasn't allowing what you're doing to sync up. And it's funny you say that because in life, it seems like we also run into that in different ways. Is like if you're ever like recently single and you think, you know, oh, I'll never get a girl, never get a girl. And then you don't. And then when you stop thinking about it, all of a sudden it's like all these girls come out of the woodwork. Or like when you're praying and it's like, nobody, I'm not, my prayers are never being answered and my prayers are never being answered. And it's like, then after you quit feeling the urgency and you pray and then it's like immediately you get, you know, it's like, where was that before? And it's like, I wonder if the human being vibrationally or frequency wise also has there's a hertz level where when we're in sync, life will come and it'll happen too. You know, like they say, manifesting the things you want, you know, it's like you can sit there and play the lottery your whole life, but you talk to some of the winners and they'll say, oh, you know, I pictured myself winning. I knew it would happen. I rubbed the ticket, you know, 10 minutes every day. And they're actually bending reality with their intention to make it the reality that they want to exist. And I think it's part of your hertz, your biology, that we actually do have that power within us as well to like, when we're in the right energy and the right frequency, our chakras, whatever, there is a way to actually channel success in whatever you're trying to do. You know, I think that's a thing for us too.
Well, I think we figured out one thing for sure right now. If you're not in sync, it hurts.
Oh, but love it.
I got to get one of those, what's it called? On Amazon, they got like those foam mics. And I should just take it and like everybody should get one. It's like when they have like a cool little thing that just came up, you're like, and you can drop the foam mic without damaging anything.
Our symbols attached to your microphone. Just.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Randy, you perfectly were able to like summarize that whole idea. Right. And because the way you said it, like you just like a QB, a quarterback, you just like passed it to me. And so because because we're all together here on this wonderful broadcast and we're all trying to get in sync anyways, right? So like that's, I think that is probably the most, what's it called? Important thing is for people to attempt to get into sync and to try to unify, not under just like ideologies, but to unify on the things that we can actually confirm.
And I think the easiest way to do that is to remove things, like remove your intent, remove your ego, remove your desire, remove your guilt, remove your worry, your doubt, like, you know, like the Buddhists, you know, whittle it away to nothing, you know, it's like less is way more, you know, it's like,
yeah,
stop overthinking it. Just like when I pray, I'll actually close my eyes and I'll give myself a few seconds just to like find that zero, find that point of like my brain is clear. Like I'm calm, I'm breathing, you know, and then I'll pray. It's like, I don't, you know, I try to just find that zero point first, you know, a job interview or something. I'll sit in my car, you know, for a couple seconds, 30 seconds, just try to find that peace, try to calm down, control your breathing and then go, you
know? Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. So it definitely seems like there's, strategies to overcoming that which we didn't know how attached to those things we were that were holding back our realignment of vibration that may be the most beneficial vibration. And I've thought a lot about the relationship between meditation and contemplation or analysis of what we're going through. And you know, there's always that the benefit of seeking to see how we get back to the zero point, the empty mind, the state of peace that is beyond all forms of understanding, beyond all forms of attachments to illusions. And at the same time, I know that there are ongoing cycles of experiences that if I spend some time focusing on what is this thing that is so in my awareness that I feel like I need to keep on pursuing, I can sort of identify the threads that we're going deeper. It's like finding the conscious linkages to the subconscious mind that we're kind of hiding in plain sight, where I keep on wanting, keep on wanting to be anxious or frustrated, or feel despair in some particular areas. If I allow myself to just fully sit with those things, just like get into that fully, then I can kind of like experience the situations without having to actually continue to loop through them in the physical reality. I can get them dealt with in some way. And so I feel like these are almost like two different approaches where we're zeroing in on finding what it is that still needs to be released, finding what it is that needs forgiveness, and trying to find a way to open our hearts and forgive or accept. And then the other side of that is the just going within and whatever it takes, releasing everything, clearing down the monkey mind, finding the self or finding God behind every manifestation of illusion that we felt was so important to be connected to. Releasing the external, I guess.
Yeah, one way I just thought of looking at that is that, you know, when you're when you're meditating and you're trying to empty yourself and become clear and all that, the results of that are that you don't form any new attachments and everything, right? You're free from that for the moment at least, but you're not creating any newer attachments. The other side of that, when you said sort of sit in that feeling and sort of almost go through it instead of trying to avoid it, that's life, right? We got to go through stuff. Like when you create a samskara and you're thrust into a situation, let's say it's a negative situation, you got to go through it. There's no other way. And so in a way, I think we do both. We have to go straight through things. And also we can have the practice of practicing meditation where we can avoid creating new habits and new impressions and new situations.
Well, right. Wait, what about the idea of, okay, because we come from source, God, whatever you want to call that type of thing. And we are apparently, and it seems like this is probably self-evident, that we are a creation, right? On some level. And since we're the offspring of that creation, we have the impulse to be creative, to create. So even though we let go of things, is in order to be able to continue to be creative, like our the source is creative, because we're that part of it, that we have been created. So if you completely let go, then you're just at that, like perhaps what Randy was calling that zero point, which is completely fine. Like, we need to be able to reset in that area. But what about the impulse to be creative? Because it seems like that is something that you can't really let go of, because it's there. So what do we create? We do create samskara. We do create these things that are not the best situation. But then the beautiful thing about that is when you go through, you get humbled, and then it's not that big of a deal anymore. And then you start to create something that's more beneficial, that brings us to more of a unified state. Kind of like what the Law of One is saying, is like that maybe that whole planet becomes something called a social memory complex. You still have your individuality, but any person on that planet can speak for the whole planet, because we're so aligned. But yet there's still this creative aspect to it, right? So how do we resolve that, or figure that out, or understand it's applied?
So yeah. Well, I know like when I was in a band, or even before that, I used to write like poetry, or now even that now when I'm writing like stories or, you know, sitcom stuff or whatever, before I start, or even during, part of creating for me was first finding that zero point. You know, it's like when you're going to paint a picture, you might think about it all week. Then you sit down to actually do it, and you might feel jumbled or confused or cloudy, but you can put yourself in that void. I feel like that's where creative energies kind of come from, is like you put yourself in a place of nothing. You're free to go anywhere, and you pull creation. Like, you ever hear artists when they talk about, well, where do you get the inspiration from that song? Or, you know, it's like you pull it from a void. You pull it from that dark place where, you know, everything exists, but nothing is, you know, there's nothing but everything, you know. It's like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's like when you put yourself in that zero point, and then you allow yourself in like a meditative state even, and you will be hit with like emotions or feelings or thoughts. It's important to like accept them for what they are, and like really hyperanalyze them. Like, if you're gonna write a song, and you sit down to write a song, and you clear your mind, and then you ask yourself, like, well, what am I feeling? What kind of song would I want to play or create? And maybe it's an angry song or a sad song, you know, whatever. And then you find that note on the scale where it feels like, yeah, that's where I'm feeling, you know. But in order to be there, you have to be totally honest with yourself, you know. And really go into yourself and like, what am I really feeling, you know, and what is that really going to sound like, or, you know?
Yeah. One way I could reframe that is, what level of yourself is the creator? And you can reach down into the deepest roots of consciousness and pull forth the deepest, you know, creativity of the infinite creator and into your life. And that's essentially what I think the Law of One talks about with the indigo chakra. The higher chakras are essentially the way in which we integrate our individual consciousness with a universal consciousness. But you could also take it down to the bottom and look, are we actually creating our reality initially from a sense of survival?
do we create when we are hungry and we want food and we choose the food and we say, this is what I'm going to create more of my reality with by putting that in my body. And this is something I had to process, is like, so what do we want to call an attachment? Is sugar an attachment? A lot of people would say, I've got such a terrible sugar addiction. And yet it's like one of the basic materials for fuel for the body, that carbohydrates break down to, but unless you're carnivore, then it's fats. And then how many people have an addiction to saturated fats? Is that why people like meat, is because of saturated fat content? But that's not a bad thing. You can't say that fueling our body with fats and carbohydrates is unhelpful, because that's essential for actually maintaining our reality. So this is an area where I was trying to figure out how do we define attachments? Because I guess we don't have to have a negative context, a negative connotation on attachments, because there's almost like a relationship between the schoolroom, the classroom that we're here for, and then what we want to do with the classroom to learn and grow and create the specific lessons that are put in front of our face for review, analysis, and healing, that can be both individual and collective when we're setting up the classrooms properly, with the first classroom like that we enter into being the body itself. Like we chose this body and now we're kind of stuck with it. You could say the body is owned by us, but ownership itself seems to be this giant illusion that we're having to work through too. And it's like, can the body own things now? Can the body own land? Does this body own the land around me? Does this body own my significant other now because we're married? It's like all these weird layers of attachment come into play, even though there's a classroom that is very valuable with each of these patterns that we're setting up for creativity. Go ahead.
Well, one thing that I see though is that, okay, we go to extremes to figure out our boundaries. How far can we go to learn something? We go from one extreme to another and find out our boundaries, in my case too, without dying, right? So like put yourself in enough kind of danger in that respect in different ways to understand what the boundaries are. And then it comes back to a lot of like ancient teachings, for example, the yin yang. It's like a perfect circle and perfect amount of dark and perfect amount of light with a little of each other in each other, that other little circle in the ends, right? And then you have Buddha talking about the middle path. You can't go too far one way or the other. You got to be on a middle path. And then Jesus even said, you have to walk the straight and narrow, right? So it's all about exploring, but then finding that balance through it. Because to be able to be an effective creator, you have to have like an understanding of all of it and have a balance to do it. Because look at us, look at the us as a creation. Like, it's perfect balance. The Fibonacci sequences in us and all these like beautiful like symmetries is within us. So it's like because we're the offspring, it feels almost like we're gods in training to be able to get that. Because like I see, I'm not a father myself just yet. Maybe one day I'll be blessed with that. But I see other parents and they see their children. And it's like, it's not like the parent in general, the parent is saying, oh no, I want to be better than my kid. I want my kid to learn what I learned and then to surpass me, right? So if any father figure or mother figure, or we call our parent in heaven, right? Do you think that God would want to be like, have that same thing? Wouldn't God want you to be the best possible and maybe even surpass certain things? And then who knows, maybe
that's kind of what this all is, right?
Yeah. And maybe you create like your own universe or whatever. Right. And again, like I mentioned this in another podcast we had together, is like in my faith, we call that becoming a God by grace. God's by grace. It's called theosis. right? They become a gods by grace. They don't know exactly what happens, but when you're connected with God and blah, 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 then you, what's it called? Then there's advancement in heaven, quote unquote. Ascension. And here's another thing too. This goes directly to Mike. When we had, remember the Ascension summit back in, what was it, 21?
Yep, Dylan 21.
Yeah, 20. I remember your talk that you had on the stage or whatever, and you put up John 17.
Yeah.
I've had that in my phone saved on that page since that talk. I can even pull it up if you want, right? Since then, because I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so crazy. It's basically Jesus talking about wanting everybody to become one with the Father, like he's one with the Father, right? That we all become one. And I'm like, I didn't even know that existed until that talk. And it's first like of all, Mike
said
you,
about
Michael.
His kid. Well, what you just said about your child is like, he just come up and out of nowhere, just open his heart and hug you and say, this is how you do life. You know, it's like, that's it. It's not hard. You know, it's like, open your heart, you know, let all the baloney go. Just, this is like, you know, a sandbox, you know, and it's like, you can play whatever you do, whatever you want, but ultimately this is for us to figure it out, you know, get all your dirty laundry out, figure it out. This is your chance. And if you don't get it this time around, saddle up, because you're coming right back, you know.
Yeah. In terms of attachments, Mike, you said where are they? That was one of your questions. I think it's in the mind. And you, because I, one of the things when I give talks about spirituality, I say is that, you know, we have the body, the mind, and the spirit, right? And so the spirit, if we're honest, we don't really even know what that is. It's just beyond, it's beyond the mind, right? It's beyond thought. We have an idea what it is, but we don't know. So you can't, how are you going to change that if you don't know what it is, right? And plus it's pure, it's part of God, it's pure, it's already perfect. You don't need to change it, right? Okay. So then you have the body, and okay, we each have a physical body, and the physical body, yeah, you can't really change the physical body either. I mean, you can, you know, gain weight or lose weight and all that, but you know, none of us is going to become 16 foot tall and green. Okay. I challenge you, if you think you have control over your body and become a 16 foot tall green person and come to my house, I'd love to see you. It doesn't happen. So our body is what it is. So the only area that we have any control or authority or opportunity is the mind. And that's why the masters say meditation is so important. And that's why I think that's where attachments lay also. Even physical attachments, like if you're addicted to sugar because your body craves sugar. Well, guess what though? Your body might crave sugar, but the only way you know that your body's craving sugar is because that craving comes through your mind on some level. So anyway, I think it's the mind. I think the mind and the intellect are the areas of improvement. That's where attachments are. And that's really everything in a human life. Does that make sense?
Can I ask you a question though, for a little bit more of clarification? Is the mind and the thought process two separate things, or are they both, or is it the same thing?
Yeah. So in the Eastern tradition, there's the mind and then there's the intellect. And I don't think I can articulate either of them in much detail, you know, as far as the teaching, only that the mind is just, I think it's more the general operation of mental processes, and the intellect is like a power. It's like I can't explain those two, but my point is these Eastern traditions, they do separate the mind from the intellect.
I want to argue that a little bit, because I do think that like your heart can be involved like beyond the mind, in that like, I believe you can also affect other things. Like you can affect the world, you can affect people around you, you know, and I think you can do that with your mind, you could also deal with your heart, your voice, you know, your intent, all those different things. Like, I get what you're saying. I don't disagree, but I think there's more. You know, I think we can, even through, I think we've talked about this before. If you're even sitting at home in a room, I think you have the power in that room. You don't have to leave that room in order to affect the world or the universe or your cells. You know, I think, can we turn into a 16-foot green man? Probably not. But can we walk on water? Jesus reportedly did. And was it through his mind or his heart or his lack of doubt or just his pure knowing that it was possible through the mind or through every cell of every atom of his body, right?
Or the fact that he didn't really physically walk on water. The phrase walking on water meant how light he was.
Well, like turning water to wine, you know, like alchemy or transmuting. Yeah,
that's changing a crowd, an upset crowd to a faithful crowd. So you could take all these biblical things and you could translate them into metaphor. That's my point.
You can, but there's also the chance that he literally did it.
Oh yeah, and Neem Karoli Baba, there's records of him doing all these kinds of miracles too. So
like, I think there's more to knowing than the brain. Like, your mind and your intellect, I think, are different. And I think that it's not only in your brain that you carry memory, because, you know, some people are born and have past life memories, but the brain physically that they are equipped with is a newborn brain. How does that brain have access to past life memories? And I think it's something in the essence of the soul that is able to resonate through more than just your whole being, not just your brain, but like every cell. I believe that there's more to it than we think. Like, I don't think you're wrong. I don't want you to think I'm arguing, but like, I think it's bigger and more complex than we're probably aware of.
Yeah. So is every cell of your body conscious? Is every cell of your physical heart conscious? And is that connected to the unseen plane where the heart is coming from? And I think that the energy patterns that we're working with are, you can't completely separate mind from body, from spirit, because they're always working together in unison. I don't think you could have one without the other. But it makes sense to me that there is a medium of thought that is not the same as the medium of matter, physical matter. And then the medium of thought can have forms that are not like physical forms, but they're still forms in our mind. And those forms can have a direction to them. And I think that's why there's a relationship between space-time dimensions and the time-space dimensions in the Law of One. They describe the physical and the metaphysical dimensions, where the time-space dimensions were essentially taking a path of travel through time with the metaphysical karma, the metaphysical choices and directions. And I think that that's essentially what's steering our thoughts, or at least our spirits are connected to this thing that is seeing with a certain amount of light in the mind that sees the path forward to a certain degree. And certainly we're very, very limited with this veil between the conscious and the unconscious mind. We're limited in how much we can see the future and how much we can see ahead of us, but we can, you know, get tiny bits of data from the heart and to steer us in a little different direction. But what aspect of our reality is, what aspect of our self is choosing to seek the heart for its steering? And I think that might be where we get into the nature of the spirit.
And it's like, you're saying with the microphone and the hertz and all the things have to be in compatibility with each other. The software has to be updated. You know, the hertz, everything has to sync together in order for you to get the best quality audio. Is like, I think that it can also be said for the body and or the human experience is that, for example, when you're in a place like of, let's just say you have a boring teacher and it's like, you can't stop looking at the clock. And it's like, man, this class felt like it lasted 6 hours. Then you go to a different class with this upbeat, you know, this teacher who's got the passion, who wants, he has something to teach, who is excited. And they just, all of a sudden the class is over and it's like, whoa, you know, time went by so much faster. I think that's because you were your mind, your heart, your intuition, like everything was in the right hertz to then, you know, process everything to its maximum capacity. Time goes quicker. The space, everything's affected differently. And in that state, when you apply it to, you know, whether you're creating music or interviewing someone on a podcast or you know, making a painting or giving a speech or whatever, it's like when everything's in line and everything's in tune to the cellular level, it's going to impact everyone. Like Jesus fed the room with one fish, like metaphorically, like you were saying, Chris, is, you know, did he feed the room with one fish, or did he, was the conversation so nourishing that people weren't hungry physically? They were being nourished on a higher level. You know what I mean? And was it that, you know, can that really be done when we're completely in sync, our minds, our intention, you know, our cellular level, everything is firing on all cylinders? Is that magical? Like, is there something beyond, you know, just the regular day to day there? Is something magical happening there? And how far is the reach of those, are those moments? You know, can you sit in a room and change the world from your living room? Maybe if you're in the correct alignment, you can actually change the world.
Well, I think it seems that it may be a harmonization issue. Mm-hmm. Because we have the mind, body, spirit, and some people add soul, right? You have these different aspects of our bodies, right? So if one of them is out of sync, right? Say the thought process, right? Because that's part of the tool set of what the mind uses. If your thought process is dysfunctional, right, then the harmony in your body would probably be dysfunctional as well. Mm-hmm. So primarily with most people, and I notice this myself too, primarily most people are walking around with unresolved thoughts, or they're in half thoughts. They're just half thoughts, things that can't be completed. So the way I look at a thought is like, here's a half thought, and here's a half thought, and when you put them together, it's like a circuit. But if the circuit is open, that means energy can leak. Mm-hmm. So exactly. if you close the circuit, doesn't matter if this thought is completely correct or not. As long as you close the circuit, the thought is able to function on its own. And then eventually, if you have an upgrade to the thought, you take the upgrade and boom, closed circuit, no leaking energy. So imagine your thought process now has that. It's working as a tool instead of it working on you as a fool. Because we're all walking around with half thoughts. Just say this is the thing, right? Just say we're all walking around with half thoughts and this is happening. Now imagine we figure it out. Our thought process is good. Now that's harmonizing. Now is our heart harmonizing with our thought process, right? And is the mind harmonizing with our hearts? And because we have a whole bunch of stuff in our body called junk DNA, what is it there for? Why? Right?
It's like what's it there for,
right?
When computers have a computer that has empty drives, yeah. And it's like the room for growth is like you have room for new software right there. It's like
So, but the thing what you can do though is because you have all this junk DNA and now you're harmonizing with everything, you have that apparent control, then perhaps you can turn into an 18-foot green guy because you have all this junk DNA, and perhaps you're able to control your environment, like walking on water or healing people or being able to bilocate physically, not just mentally, because it's both and or. Like, we apparently, this is what I feel strongly myself, is we are that technology. We are the tool to get us across. There is a what's it called? A genetic marker in our body. After 25 years old, it turns on. That's when you start aging. If you had access to that switch and switched it back to all your cells dividing perfectly, you would appear to be around 25, 30 years old as long as you want, because you have access to that switch, that genetic switch. Well, go ahead. I'd like to
touch on some of this. I definitely think that everything in the physical illusion is like a symbol of something on the deeper level, the mind, the spirit, that is manifest. I feel like the physical compounds in DNA, the way in which they're put together, I think that's almost like that's the manifestation of the template of vibration. It's like the sound waves coming off of the plucked thread, which was the choice of incarnation, which the mind and the spirit were heavily engaged in that mental selection, or I should say spiritual selection of the pathway that the mind could be taking through the collaboration with the physical, I guess, video game character, you could say, that the body is being. But I think what you were talking about earlier with the completed thought, I think that's best expressed in some literature as being the single-minded or single-pointed mind, so that the mind is no longer scattered. And what I think when the mind is able to stay on one thing, that is the same thing as going to a zero point with everything else, because there's no longer the baggage that's blocking the awareness that the mind can reach a certain place, and that place may actually be so deep in the mind that it then can affect the heart of why manifestation has happened the way that it has happened. But I think that in order to get down to that deepest point where we're trying to change our reality, we're automatically coming through the heart. We're coming into alignment with everyone else on the planet, and with the reasons for the incarnations, the higher self plans being made by all the others on the planet. And I think that this is why there's an importance in the teachings of Jesus and in the life of Neem Karoli Baba, where there was importance placed on staying out of view to a large degree, because when we're not infringing on the free will of others who do not want to see that or would be offset in some way in what they're going through by seeing something that doesn't make any sense, generally there seems to be a value in allowing for some degree of secrecy for miracles to be able to have an easy way of existing, because the nature of reality is a collective reality, and the heart is leading us to appreciate the unity of all mind and all thought across all people. And this is the nature of the social memory complex that you referenced, the idea that when we finally get on the same page about what matters, then we can finally join in mind, and our minds become like the internet, where we're surfing on the sea of mind that's no longer so separate in these little tiny computer cells, but it's actually shared in one larger processor that can see all the different memories of all the different people and understand why people are not benefited by being able to fly, for example, or being able to manifest food in front of themselves when they needed to be able to work with others to learn how to produce food, learn how to have money for food, or whatever it is that's allowing us to do the lessons that free us up from the blockages to actually being fully in love and cooperative and operating in harmony with a bigger aspect of the self, which is the collective consciousness.
Have you guys heard of the telepathy tapes?
I've heard of it. Haven't got a chance to review it yet.
Hey guys, just comment on the past topic before we leave it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. First of all, I know one thing for a fact And I'm going to tell you guys right now that if you don't believe this, you're absolutely wrong. And I don't like you anymore. And that fact is that Mike and the Meat Suits is the best show on the internet, guys. I mean, that's it's clear. It's proven. Okay. Okay. But really, so Randy, everything you brought up about the heart, I love it. Yes, for sure. I was definitely simplifying things, mind, body, spirit. I was simplifying it to make a point of that the mental level is where everything happens, basically. The heart is everything, right? The heart is our connection to divinity, and the heart is how we feel things from divinity, and the heart is basically our compass. So the heart is the heart of the matter, and the heart of the human being is the heart of the universe. So the heart is really what matters. That's why we actually meditate on the heart, right? But again, my point was that the mind is where we can make a difference, and that's why we have to meditate and control our mind. And then just real quick about the miracles of Jesus and other people and all that stuff. Look, we don't know. None of you know. I don't know. It's okay. You believe it, fine. You don't believe it, fine. Guess what? There's a lot of work that each of us has to do in our own consciousness and in our own lives to move forward and grow and evolve. And it really doesn't matter. We're not, and we shouldn't argue over if someone did a miracle or not. That's my opinion. So anyway,
I think this podcast is a miracle.
Well, life itself, right? I mean, we're all the one out of the billions of sperm that made it. And we made it to this age without being fucked up. And, you know, the world,
we're all winners.
I think we talked about this before. Is like this, maybe the samskara stuff. The first time we ever touched on it is we were talking about how all of our life is kind of like a trauma response. You know, it's like you're constantly trying to survive and survive in the best you can and have the best life you can. But all these things happen. You know, it's like, we got to get jobs. We got to, you know, get spanked as a kid. You can't always have your way, you know? And it's like, everything's kind of a trauma response, I think, to life. It's like, even the soul being in these bodies is a trauma response to, you know, I didn't want to be born, you know, why am I here and all this stuff, you know? And it's like, we're all just doing our best. Everybody's winging it. You know, it's like, nobody has all the answers.
Yeah. All right, John, did we interrupt you?
Yeah, honestly, how rude. Oh, no, I was going to say about the telepathy tapes. That is a blockbuster. It was talking to, just about what Mike was saying before Chris rudely interrupted us. Right?
How dare he want to speak?
What are the telepathy tapes, by the way? I've never heard of this.
It's crazy. You can get it on Spotify. Or they do have, she uploaded it to YouTube too. She has a little playlist of like 10 episodes so far. So it's basically these autistic kids, right? That most of them are non-speakers, and many of them don't even know that they really have a body, but they can read their parents' minds, their teachers' minds, their doctor's minds. The teachers, parents, and doctors know, and they can communicate with. And also these kids, they could be like across the country. They don't even, their families don't know each other. But these two kids go to a place called The Hill. It's like an etheric heavenly realm chat room, right? They go there and they have like bodies, and so they're fine, and they're all like geniuses, and they go and they talk, they figure things out, they come back, and there's like a network of these autistic kids, but these kids are saying that we all have it already. But the thing is the reason why it's more pronounced for them is because they don't have as much access to their bodies. Like if one of the parents needs to communicate with the kid, they have to touch them somewhere so they can know, okay, this is my arm, and then I can like do something, right? And it's unbelievable. And it's not just about telepathy. There's other things with it that are kind of like telepathic, remote viewing style type of thing. And it's, and they're very like they use more like spiritual terminology. Like,
does that suggest that everything is a distraction? Like, even, you know, like if a person loses their sight, they rely more on their hearing gets better. It's like when you're autistic and you don't have function of your body, does your soul have a stronger essence and it's able to do other things? You know, is everything a distraction? Like, is even being in these bodies a distraction for the soul to limit its, you know, to kind of like ground it into these prisons or these bodies? You know, are we all forgetting our true spiritual capability just because we're so focused on our 9-to-5s or eating, you know, or all these other different distractions, you know? Yeah.
I say yes. But I also believe that we're experiencing what we ordered.
at the same time though, like looking at it, like this is where I perhaps could use the term change of mind. Is prison, 9-to-5, eat, all that kind of stuff. But why don't you switch it? Right?
Yeah. Like
to gratitude, right?
Yeah.
Because totally. One of the things in my faith, for example, the biggest sin is guilt and despair. And just to bring in gratitude to everything, like what we were talking about earlier, like the miracle. Like a miracle is me waking up in the morning and I'm breathing. Farting. And that brings me gratitude. Yeah, well, farting can like wake me up a bit more, but but it brings me gratitude. Okay, I got like a my nose works. Thank you, right? That type of thing. Like, but being having the gratitude, changing the frequency of that, because like one of the famous little sayings that we got in the community is what you resist persists, right? So it's kind of like you just got to let it happen but just get out your etheric surfboard and just surf on those waves of improbabilities or probabilities or challenges, to surf on it and eventually have a good time with
it. What if this existence is the vacation, or what if this is the theme park? We're supposed to just be enjoying it. And then when we die, it's like, oh, back to work. Oh, I should have enjoyed that more.
Well, I like what you said, Randy, and I like what you said, John. I think they're just, as humans, at times we feel like we're in jail in a human body, and other times we feel grateful and all that. So I think it's both. I think they're actually both true.
Oh yeah.
At the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. We've certainly chose to be in these bodies, and it doesn't make sense to commit suicide just yet. We're finding
any value, right?
Yeah.
We're all gonna die. Why rush?
unless you're in a Tesla in front of Trump Tower, that's fine.
Oh.
To expose the whole UFO cover up.
There's too many rabbit holes right now.
Situation.
All the rabbit holes at once.
I think there's no dirt in Mike's backyard because the rabbits took all the dirt away. There's a million rabbit holes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a holy backyard.
Oh. Oh my goodness. Yeah. It's my Aranachula. I won't go there. So I want to talk about more about the idea that we're essentially going from schoolroom, classroom to classroom. And like the line between attachments and classrooms is the gray area that I was initially, I know I'm not going to solve it in this call, but the, you know, I could say that I have an attachment to my family, but when I'm here at home, my family is my school. And I could feel chained to the son who I have to care for, who's like the most loving, you know, mirror of me, I could imagine. It's like this is the opposite of chains, but I'm always tempted to feel like this is chains. What I want to go work, go help other people who are asking me for help, go make more money so that I can help my wife, and all these different relationships can feel like a burden. But man, I have it. I'm living like a king, and I miss it. It's like there. If I were to sit down in my past self, write down what would be the most ideal life I could have imagined, mm-hmm. I've pretty much made it. And the fact that I can't see that because I've got all these still attachments to outcomes that are just like, it's like I'm learning the same lessons in a different classroom, but the lessons are I'm finally starting to piece together that they're, you know, they're deeper, you know, just having trust and faith in the perfection of the present moment is still where I'm needing to come back to, just deeper and deeper. And it's like the need to fuel the body with food, the need to find love, the need, all the basic needs that the chakras seem to be, each of the different chakras seem to be relating to, you know, the social aspects of life and the learning how to express the self more freely in the Blu-ray communications, learning how to be more open and honest and everything. All these lessons are still there, but it's like the ability to be full of reverence for the perfection of the present moment seems to be this variable that I can keep on plugging into and just appreciating with more and more gratitude if I can get there.
You have to mentally take time to realize in the context of now what the context of your previous self would feel like in now. And it's like, if you do this like once every day, just 30 seconds, just take 30 seconds and just long hug or whatever, and just kind of like wake yourself up, you know, in the dream, remember to wake yourself up because you're in the dream. And like, until you're not in the dream, you won't realize how fun it is to be, you know what I mean? It's like when you're not sick, you don't think about it, but all of a sudden you get a cold, you're like, oh man, I was taking for granted all the time I wasn't sick. Now, next time I'm not sick, I'm really going to appreciate it. And then you forget, you know, it's like,
yeah.
I think, yeah. Mike, one of the things you're describing is, you know, you're talking about being in the moment and appreciating everything for what it is and all that, which is actually one of the goals of one of my teachers is they called it constant remembrance. And it was where the more you meditate, and the more you can be in a passive state and just sort of be an observer of your thoughts or when you're meditating, it's just your thoughts you have to ignore. Right. And so, but the way the teaching went was that when you meditate, you can learn how to meditate, learn how to ignore thoughts and be completely passive. And then when you're done meditating and you stand up and you're in your regular life, you can still be in that meditative consciousness where they call it the constant remembrance. You're constantly remembering not really even the meditation, but the connection, the divine connection from your heart. And it's not remembering like divine connection from my heart, divine connection in my heart, divine. I can't forget this divine connection, divine. It's not that kind of remembering. It's a very subtle, remembrance. Where it's like, think of like a thought, but it's not like a thought. It's like a whisper. It's like a tiny little breath of a whisper of that. Basically, you're one with God, right? And that's it. And then, but it's a practice. But apparently, the more you do that, you can live and do everything you want to do with your family, everything. And you can even be there and you can have some fun and you can feel the feelings, but like, because you're in that constant remembrance, you're not creating any new samskaras either. So it's like the best of both worlds. You're sort of detached, but you're there, but you're detached. You're not creating any new samskaras and you're constantly in connection. So anyway, I just wanted to explain that teaching because that the teaching was, If you can develop constant remembrance, and it actually, Master said, if you can be in constant remembrance for 7 full days nonstop, he said, that's it. You're done. You don't have to meditate anymore. Like for the rest of your life, you're done. Because once you know how to be there, then you don't need
I
to.
I feel like I did that as a little kid. I kind of like felt like I've achieved that as a little kid. Cause like, I remember even when I'm in school and miserable or whatever, it's like, school. But then I just remember the lunch lady, she would say, "You're always so happy." She's like, "You're the highlight of my day." She said, "No matter what everyone, all the kids are doing," she's like, "whenever I get to you, you smile and it's like, you're so at peace. How do you do that?" And I'll never forget that. And it was just like you go to your happy place, I guess you could say, you know, it's like, and when you live in your happy place, like you said, for long enough, like no one can take that away. It's like Shawshank Redemption, you know, it's like when he says, like, they can never take that away. You know, you can put you in a prison and you can still have that in you, you know, you can never get to that.
Yeah. You know? One of the things I have to battle with my wife around is the line between, we're very serious now. We must very seriously change our diaper, get new clothes on, or the play. What is allowed to be play and divine play? We're allowing ourselves to be in great joy at everything. And my son is always looking for the wiggle room and anything that we're trying to do to find how we can turn it into a game. And he's getting better about avoiding angry parents because he doesn't like it when we're angry, but he's also never ending trying to find the way to turn the current experience into play, unless he's in a bad mood, which is something we're trying to teach him not to get there. You know, I found a fun trick. This will be a quick thing here that I can stop. If he's watching a TV show, I can stop it and I can watch his reaction and I can try to and encourage that reaction and then tell him, I'll turn it back on when I don't see any, when you're not frustrated anymore, we're not angry at me and we're not sad, I'll turn it back on. And you can't hide it. I try to make sure that he can appreciate what I'm saying. And sometimes there's just like a switch that has to go off in his head and he just turns off all that frustration and he's just joyful again that he's playing the game again. And then I can turn it back on and he gets the lesson.
That's going to be very useful for him when he's older.
That's awesome. Yeah.
That's a microcosm. Oh my goodness.
Well, one thing too that I noticed, like when you were talking, Chris, about letting go of the thoughts type of thing and being able to be in that connection. But I also feel another way that can be achieved as well is closing the circuit of the thought. Because once the circuit is closed, that means you're not thinking. The thought is just there, already complete.
You can archive
and
it.
And you bring it up when you need. And since, so imagine your mind full of complete thoughts. So I believe that that's another way to have that, to quote unquote achieve, because I don't know if that's a good word, to achieve that spiritual connection, because it's already here and now we can only deepen into it. I feel very strongly about that, right? So it, like, so that it's already there and a peace is just there on demand and constant because you have complete thoughts.
I think you could call that middle pillar. I think you could call that balanced thoughts, balanced on both columns of the tree of life and in the Kabbalah, or just balanced in the positive and negative energies that felt out of place until you had that completion.
What if you train yourself to be okay with archiving incomplete thoughts?
Yeah, that's completely fine. Yeah.
Well, John, that's my question for you, is like, okay, let's say you have a complete thought and it's in your consciousness. And then let's say you remember that tomorrow for breakfast, you want to have toast with butter and you're going to make the coffee and you got to wake up at 7:15 and you got to turn this on and turn that off. And then you realize, oh my God, wait, I was supposed to be having my perfect thought. So my question is, when you talk about having this completed perfect thought, that's a constant thought that's not being interrupted? Because I'll tell you, and everyone knows this, if you sit down and try to have one thought, you're going to be bombarded by other thoughts, right?
No, it's not that. Okay. And it's not a perfect thought. It's only a complete thought. So you have the complete thought. Me making my toast and my coffee for the morning, something goes out of place. I remove that one half of the thought and upgrade it. Oh, I got a sausage in the freezer. I'll cook that with my breakfast. So it's like, so as in like being completely okay with something being destroyed in within yourself. Like it didn't go the way you wanted it to go. That's completely fine.
It's better.
But you had, you had that complete thought, but now release, humility, upgrade, right? So
it makes it more memorable.
Like, yeah.
Like if you just wake up every day and you have your complete thought of, I want to make my coffee, eat my toast, you know, get ready for work, whatever. You're not going to remember all those days. It's nothing. Like it's just another day. But if all of a sudden someone comes, hey, I brought a breakfast burrito for you. Oh, that completed thought now is upgraded or whatever. That's memorable.
Yeah.
Well, like, I could tell you one. Life,
don't we,
I could
don't tell, we remember the bad things that happen more than the good things?
I could tell you one thing for sure is that my complete thought in the morning that's extremely constant is coffee. Go ahead, Mike. Sorry.
But if someone brought you a cappuccino.
Sure. Why not?
So same family.
Yeah.
So I think what we're talking about is the ladder that we build in our minds. You know, Edgar Cayce said that mind is the builder. And I think that as we understand that there really isn't anything that needs to be out of place in the mind, this is essentially the great way of the mind, the archetype of the law of one, that there's always the next thought that allows for detachment from the previous thought. And the degree to which we are attached is the degree to which we haven't yet discovered the thoughts of God that are the way of looking at things that is full of love, full of forgiveness, because there's really nothing out of place. So if you see somebody cutting you off in the road and it's bringing you frustration, you have an automatic reaction when you have the ladder built in to say, oh man, I bet they're having a bad day. I want to pray for them, or I want to send loving, positive thoughts, because I appreciate that they are just another version of me that's teaching me about how much I can recognize myself and recognize that I can still be out of balance at times, and I want to learn to always be in balance. So it's like the balancing that hasn't been completed is mirrored outward, and we get all the mirrors and the imbalanced opportunities of perception around us, and we take that in, and we keep on working on that ladder or that pyramid inside of us, where we get back to the pinnacle of appreciation of the perfection.
So you mean like a ladder, like a walking, climbing ladder?
Like you said, the upgrades. And I think the upgrading the thoughts about food is like seeing the food is like communion or the sacrament. It's like you can take every piece of food and say, I see Jesus in this, and I'm becoming Jesus as I take the body. And that's the most upgraded view of food that the way that I've seen it. I think that in Hindu culture, they have the prasad. You offer it to the guru. People even recommended with Neem Karoli Baba, you could take a picture of him to offer it to him. And they have a different metaphysical idea around it, where it's like they take a piece of it, they make it divine, something like that. Do you know, Chris, what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the idea of prasad. And when you eat that food in constant remembrance, the food has the most benefit and with the least, the opposite of benefit.
Baggage, yeah.
You know what's funny is we were making the comparison of life as like a classroom or school or, you know, and I always said, I remember when I graduated high school graduated and I was done with school, and I looked back on it and I said, you know, all the stuff we were supposed to be taught and all the, you know, things we learned and everything. So the most valuable thing I took away from school is how to deal with other people, you know, how to see other, you know, handle other people that I didn't get along with, or bullies, or, you know, different levels of spiritual growth and all these things. I think for me, the most valuable thing was the people, you know, and how I learned to be around and interact with all those people and challenges that they brought. So, I mean, if that is what I took away as the most valuable thing from school, why are we all on this planet together, right? Why don't we all have our own individual planets? Maybe part of it is to learn how to be around diversity and all these different things and learn how to accept negativity and turn it into a positive, you know, in some way or somehow.
You know, another view real quick. Another view from the Gita is that we're all just little bits of consciousness of the divine, and we're and the divine or God, whatever you want to say. The only way that God can experience things is through us in the flesh. Mm. So really each of us is just in the world experiencing. And maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe in the big picture, it doesn't even matter if it's positive or negative, or if you're a serial killer, or if you're a great mother or father, or I'm just saying, because it's all experience for the divine. And anyway, that's one view from the Gita, which is interesting.
I absolutely agree with that. Mm. It's like, what's the best way to learn is to teach, you know? Yep. And like, if we were made in God's image, you know, maybe in some way God exploded into a billions of particles and those became souls, and we're all little reflections of God, you know, and through ourselves we are whole, but also part of something bigger. And all of our imperfections, you know, are also God's imperfections. And through us, he's learning, or God's learning through us. And yeah, I believe that. Absolutely. I've thought about that a lot of different times.
Yeah, because even God... Sorry, John, one more thing.
I forgive you.
When God was pure and he wasn't manifest yet, I don't know, is this in the Bible where God said, it's almost like God got bored or something. He's like, I got to do something. This is doing me no good here. I got to do something. And then he created creation, and then he learns through creation. Yeah, anyway, sorry, John, go ahead.
well, the one thing too is that, okay, just say that we are all these divine divisions of God, right? The children or whatever, right? And it seems like we have to kind of come together and cooperate. And then through that cooperation to unify. And I found it crazy in my faith, like the deeper teachings are like, I never thought like it was this deep, but they actually use the word synergy to synergize and to cooperate together, and then to become gods by grace in that respect, and to be have that oneness feeling, becoming one with God, like John 17, right? And also, I was listening to a podcast with one of our bishops. He's a really smart dude. And he brought up like, oh yeah, we look at everything like this or like something like this or whatever. We call them all logi, like pieces of the word. So everything is a logos. Like, and I'm like, what? The law of one talks about that. I'm like, how did that? So it's like, we already had it. Like I'm before the law of one came out too. That wordage was already there.
The universal truth is always universal truth.
Yeah.
Whether it's from the past or the present.
So, but the whole idea is for the logos, all these little bits of logi, are to come together with free will to unify, and then to be together in that presence through synergy, synergizing together.
Yeah.
better.
And that's absolutely why the Book of John is so amazing, that they, you know, the John chapter one and the Logos became flesh. This was a word that was from many different Greek philosophers, and they all had their own little spin on the main meaning of Logos. And it's like hundreds of years of philosophy just explaining like all the biggest concepts of the nature of creation coming from mind into matter. All that was thought of by the Greek philosophers, and now it's just like connected. Oh, and yep, Jesus is that same thing. So we have this unifying principle between Christianity and all of this big, heavy philosophy from ancient times. It's beautiful.
Right on.
Yeah, like the individual can build a barn, right? It's going to take a while, but the Amish together can build a barn in a day, you know? It's just, it's better when we all come together and can do something, you know?
Yeah, and each of you could have a great show, but when Mike and the Meat Suits comes together, it's on another level, you guys.
This is way beyond my wildest dreams right here, right now, with you guys.
Me it's too.
A perfect moment. Yeah, I love it. All right. We could make it one step perfect, more perfect, if we say we'll have to close it out at some point here. And we can invite attendees and we can wrap this episode if you guys are happy with that.
I'm always happy, even when I'm sad.
Bullshit. Wait,
Randy, I just gave you a title for a song you can work on.
I'm happy when I'm sad.
I'm happy even when I'm sad.
I'm hungry when I'm pooping.
That's a hit single right there.
I'm formless okay. When I'm formed.
That was good.
Okay, terrific.
All right.
Anyways, all right. Meat suit.
I love you guys as meat suits and beyond. All right.
Don't forget to feed your meat suits.
All right.
Ciao.